Welcome back, everybody, to Real Bearded News. Sean and I are here to talk about the Covenant this week. We really enjoyed it, and we're really excited to talk about it. We have been looking forward to this one, and we have really enjoyed it. So let's buckle up and let's go. Wow. Over to you, Sean.
That was a lot better.
Thanks.
That was a lot better. It was good.
Good. Good, good.
You still get a laugh. So, Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, not to be confused with The Covenant.
Oh, yeah.
Two different movies.
That's true.
One's about witches, and the other one is about terrorism.
Yes. Guy Ritchie's The Covenant.
I do like The Covenant, though. Mm-hmm. No, I really do like that movie. I thought that movie was dope as hell.
Yeah.
I like witches and shit.
Yeah. When you were like, we're going to watch The Covenant this week, I like was looking it up, and I was like, wait, which one? Because you'd said, you were like, usually we watch a lot of horror movies. But then I looked it up and it was like, there's two different covenants. What are you talking about? And then you told me it was the Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, which was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. Mm-hmm. So let's do a synopsis of The Covenant. It's war. Thanks to 9/11, 2001. For all you young kids. Yeah, that happened. So.
Wow.
I mean, if I have to explain, if this has to become a history lesson as to what happened in 9/11, bro, like, I'm not going to.
No.
But I am going to date myself. I was 11 when 9/11 happened. I was in the sixth grade.
Should I date myself?
Probably you weren't not. Even born, bro.
I was born. I was just like 9 months old, 6 months old.
Disgusting.
Thanks.
So you have literally no memory as to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
However, did you even realize that you grew up in a warring time United States?
Honestly, no. I didn't. Like, it was not super prevalent to me.
Yeah. Bet you if you were in Afghanistan, you would have known.
No way. I know, like, probably when I was around, like, probably 12 to 15, I was a little bit more aware of what was going on in Afghanistan. Because I think
what
I had
year
some friends.
Was it in 20 when you were 15?
2016. So it was like. Okay. It was like 2014 to 2016 time.
Okay.
That, I don't know. For some reason, it was like people were talking about it more. I think that was also, it was when Osama bin Laden had been
killed.
Taken and killed. Okay. So that's around when I kind of became a little bit more aware of the fact that like America was at war somewhere.
Sure.
I didn't quite understand it at the time, but like I understood it more as I got older.
Yeah.
But I do remember about a year ago when like, everyone was, or 2 years ago now, when they were pulling everybody out of Afghanistan. I do remember that because there were a lot of people that I knew that it was, excuse me, there were a lot of people that I knew that it was really like hard on them and stuff like that. So. Yeah.
How old were you in 2000? Let's go with 9.
I was 8.
You
just
were
subtract
eight.
1 year.
Ah, okay.
Oh, no, sorry. Add 1 year. I was 20. I was 10. I was 10. I was 10.
In 2009, you were 10.
In 2009, I was 10. You just have to add a year because I was born in 2001.
Okay. So I had just gone into basic training in 2009, like January 2009.
Dang.
So, and it may have been a result because of 9/11. I don't know. I've always wanted to be a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I did become one. So that was a good time.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, I mean, The Covenant. Guy Ritchie's The Covenant takes place in 2018,
mm-hmm.
in 2018. So it's been a few years since we initiated the war on terror. And obviously, Americans are very American when it comes to learning other languages.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have like reasons to learn another language, you don't, right?
Yeah.
I was fortunate. I went to an international high school. And so language was a curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I had to learn French. I had an option between Japanese and Italian, Latin at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was like you either learn Latin, Japanese, or French. I went with French because I knew a little bit of Latin. And then Japanese, really hard language. I didn't want to try it. I'm going to be honest. Besides, you talk to a girl in French,
uh-huh.
You good.
The language of love.
You talk to a girl in Japanese.
She's like, what?
You're like, you're a fucking nerd.
Yeah, I was going to say you're a nerd.
So I went with the safe language, right? I went with French. Eventually they added like Chinese and Italian. And I was like, oh, they also added Hebrew one time. So I started taking that shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty dope.
That's pretty cool.
My French teacher was also my Hebrew teacher.
Wow.
So she would teach me Hebrew. I'd be like, you know.
Nice, thanks.
Heck yeah, dude. Read the Torah. Let's go. I will read the Torah in English because it's easier. It's also called the first five books of the Bible.
Yep.
So it's a lot easier.
Got it on your phone.
Hell yeah, yeah. Gospel library. But yeah, so yeah, I was fortunate enough to like learn a language and stuff because of the high school that I went to. So the high school that I went to is the second high school that I went to. The first high school I just did my freshman year, and then I finished off my high school career from sophomore to senior at this international high school. I was able to meet a lot of kids from a lot of different countries, like Albania.
Nice.
I didn't know Albania was a thing until like the 10th grade. So I'm fucking 15 and I'm like, oh, you're white, but you have like a very heavy accent. Like, what part of Alabama are you from? And it's like, I'm Albanian. It's like, oh shit. What's that? You know, albino, you meant? Like, you're black?
It almost sounds like Alabama.
It sounds like you're American to me. But, like, I found out what Albanians were, Montenegros, Montenegrin. Basically, your Yugoslavian kind of, like, countries. Mm-hmm. Met that, like, found out what those were. A lot of people from Iraq, a lot of people from Afghanistan, Iran. Really nice fucking people. Like, they were awesome. Met people from different countries in Africa, dude. Like, there was a dude from Eritrea. They look exactly like Ethiopians, but they will kill you if you say that to them. Because they had a war and shit, mm-hmm. but they look the same. Very interesting. But it was really cool, right? Like, I feel like the people that have gone to that high school and that are still going have been subjected to a very different worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I learned to love people from different countries a lot better than your standard high school student, right? Because we still had, I don't want to call it segregation, but we still had a little bit of separation of like cultures because we're different, right? And you're still young and you're still learning to, you know, be tolerant mm-hmm. about different ideas. However, because I went to this high school, I feel like I learned to be tolerant. And so when I say that the typical American doesn't have that opportunity is because, did you get to learn a language in high school?
I had the option to learn language. So actually it was required if you, for certain colleges in the area that you uh-huh. had, I think 2 or 3 credits of some sort of foreign language. So I took 4 years of Spanish and the other option I had was French at my high school.
And you speak Spanish fluently?
Definitely not. for a bit there, I could speak in very broken Spanish, uh-huh. and I could not conjugate a verb to save my life outside of the present tense. It's like, if you wanted me to talk to you about something that happened a while ago,
really?
No, you get the infinitive.
You get what you get.
Yeah.
Damn.
So, yeah, because I went, my family and I went to an orphanage to help, like, build stuff and, like, repair things and stuff, and pretty much nobody there spoke English, mm-hmm. and so I would talk to the kids, but only in, like the most basic sense of the verb with, like, a couple nouns, but, like, I can mostly understand what they were saying, but I definitely don't speak it, so,
nice.
Yeah, I think America could definitely be a lot better in the sense of learning languages, and I think that also helps with tolerance, too,
yeah.
just, like, being a little bit more aware of other people.
Yeah, because the minute that you start learning a language, you kind of start getting infused into the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was learning French, and I wasn't necessarily like infused with French culture because my teacher was from Switzerland. So my mm-hmm. first teacher was from Switzerland, my first French teacher. She got pregnant and she left. And so my second teacher was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
She was like the coolest Jew ever, though. She was all tatted up and shit. I really wasn't infused into French culture. However, I did learn about a lot of Francophone speaking countries in Africa that were colonized by the French, right? And so I learned more about those countries rather than France. Obviously, we knew about France because it's where the language comes from. But I definitely think that language kind of helps you become tolerant and understanding as to why people do the things that they do the way they do them.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, why would you care,
mm-hmm.
right? Why would you want to learn a language? And I feel like a lot of people who end up learning Spanish as a Hispanic dude, right? You guys start to understand the reason that we do stuff. And sometimes we're not aggressive. We're just very assertive about things because that's what our culture is. Like, our mm-hmm. culture is about being assertive or whatever. And so, obviously, if you learn languages, then cool. However, when you join the military, not a lot of people have that experience. Less, let alone giving the history that we have had with Arabic countries, we don't care enough to learn Arabic. And I say Arabic just to cover the various dialects of Arabic that you could have, or the various languages that you can have from the Arabic language. And so we don't care. We don't care to do that. I know when I joined, I had the opportunity to learn Arabic because I look Arabic. I look like everything but what I am. And so obviously you could learn how to speak it, but I may look Arabic and I could learn how to say hello. However, I'm not in the culture. I don't know how to respond to certain things, right? And so we hire a lot of interpreters or translators, but we're really not there to the they're not really there to translate. They're literally there to interpret the situation, kind of let us know how to handle certain things, how to handle checkpoints and stuff like that. And so this movie takes place in 2018, and we start off with, you know, there's a guy who is talking with, there's a soldier talking to an Arabic dude who is hauling a truck, right? And he has shit in the truck. It's supposed to be like farm shit. And so the soldier asks the interpreter to kind of like let him know that he has to stop the vehicle and to like get out. Mm-hmm. And then we're not, the Americans are not understanding what the driver is saying. And he's like, how can you betray your own country and blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. So we're already getting set up, right? We're understanding that there are people in Afghanistan still in 2018, which hasn't been too long ago, that feel like those who are working for Americans are betraying the country, are betraying their religion, are betraying everything that they've been taught since they were little kids, which we could understand because if we were to, let's say, go to Russia and just work for Russians, pretty sure that Americans would be like, how can you betray your country? Kind of a thing, right? Mm-hmm. Even though you're just like, I'm getting paid. Mm-hmm. What I don't know. I don't think that me taking care of my own is betraying my country, right? Mm-hmm. There's a whole thing there, but I digress. It turns out that the dude of this truck is a Taliban member, and he blows it up and he kills not only the interpreter, but he kills the soldier as well. Mm-hmm. And so we get presented with a new interpreter. Obviously, there is a mourning period, but we get presented with a new interpreter, and his name is Ahmed. And John and Ahmed start off a relationship of like, it's very interesting because I don't want to say it's strained, but it's also not like, welcome, my BFF. It's like, you're here to do a job, yeah, and I'm your fucking superior kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's definitely like, John is very much like, I'm in charge, and you do what I say.
Mm-hmm.
But then Ahmed is like, well, I know what's going on more than you do. And so he starts making decisions when John is calling the shots. And Ahmed's like, well, that's not the right call. So there is a bit of, not so much a power struggle, but more of like, being able to listen to Ahmed and take his advice,
yeah,
when he doesn't necessarily want to.
Like, there has to be a certain level of trust, right? Mm-hmm. And he just met Ahmed, so there is that part where it's like, I just met you. You could be Taliban for all I know.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I trust your call? Kind of a thing, right? Which is justifiable in a time of war. Mm-hmm. You don't know who to trust. But we find out that Ahmed is doing this because they were promised American visas.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that he also has joined is because his son has died due to Taliban shootings.
His wife is also pregnant.
And his wife is pregnant with a new child. So he doesn't want another, he doesn't want his family to perish. Because obviously if they stay where they're at, you know, they're more likely to perish.
Mm-hmm.
And so he joins the Americans. We also find out that Ahmed used to sell heroin to the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
So the Taliban are huge heroin addicts, which is cool, you know, to each their own.
Uh-huh.
Heroin, when used correctly and not overdosing like we do in America, has some really calming effects. And we can see that happen when we progress through the movie and we see John like really dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like cold. Obviously, the heroin is going to raise his temperature, which is needed because I don't know if you guys have ever been to a desert. It's hot as hell in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It is cold as fuck at night.
Oh, yeah.
It is really cold.
Yeah.
There's nothing to cover you. So it's like, okay, cool. Even the sand gets cold, you know? Mm-hmm. And so obviously, high winds and everything, you know, let me smoke a little bit of heroin. And it calms John down to the point where he's able to survive everything that has to happen. But we're getting a little too far. So Ahmed deals heroin, whatever, or used to deal heroin, especially to the Taliban. Ends up stopping the business because of what they did to his kid. And he joins the Americans. So there's a couple of times that we see Ahmed go ahead and make calls, like you mentioned, that kind of like surpass John.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about those.
Yeah. So there's a scene in the movie where they are trying to get some information from one of the Taliban members. And John is in the truck. Ahmed's outside. He's trying to talk with this guy, negotiate in some ways. And they have kind of like wads of American cash that they'll give people for information. And so at first, John's just like telling Ahmed, tell him to tell us what we want to know, kind of thing. And Ahmed's like trying to talk to him. And this guy from the Taliban is like, how dare you like be working with the dirty Americans? And like,
we know who you are.
Yeah, we know who you are. Like, we'll kill your family, kind of stuff. And then Ahmed's like, he's not going to talk. He's not going to talk. They'd already given him like some cash. And then Ahmed's like, we just have to give him more, or he's not going to give us like, he's not going to give us any sort of information. And John is like, no, we gave him the cash. This is the call I've made. You need to listen to me. And Ahmed's like, well, I know these people. I know what I'm doing. And Ahmed's trying to do what John says, but you can clearly see that the Taliban member is just getting more and more frustrated and is just like not going to give him anything. And so Ahmed throws him some more cash and they end up getting what they want. And so it's like, yes, it worked, but he did go against what John said. So it's kind of that, like, they're trying to figure out kind of where they fit within this puzzle, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then we move forward with the information. It was kind of a bust.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get some additional information. And as they're driving to the location, Ahmed is like, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And John's like, what do you mean? He's like, there's a more direct route. Like, we shouldn't be taking this one.
Yeah.
The only reason that we would be taking this is if we were getting sent to an ambush. Like, you need mm-hmm. to stop the car.
Mm-hmm.
John is hesitant to believe it, but he does.
Yeah.
And so he gets out of the car and they start doing the whole recon thing. And according to satellites, it's completely clear. He sends up a sniper to kind of like do a little more recon. But then you don't see Ahmed for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that he's beating the shit out of the other interpreter.
Yeah.
And he's getting information out.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, John at gunpoint is like, you need to stop. You need to let him go. And he does eventually.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he said that the Taliban took his family and that the way to release him was to go down this road.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find out, because John is arguing like, hey, like, this guy has been vetted. He's been with us for a while.
Yeah.
There's no way that he's going to betray us. And then he is betrayed. And I think that's the point where kind of John respects Ahmed,
because
he's willing to do what needs to get done. Because obviously his call, it's ignorant at times. He doesn't have all the information.
Yeah.
Ahmed has the part of the information that he needs. So he comes to the conclusion that it's a good deal at that point.
Mm-hmm. And there's a really good line that Ahmed says of, so John's talking to him and he's like, you're a translator. You're here to translate. And he said, no, I'm an interpreter. I'm here to interpret. So it's like, he's not just there to tell him what they're saying in like this other language. He's there to like help him out, to interpret the culture, to interpret like what's going on, kind of thing.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And then because of that, it turns out that when they get satellite image again, they see that they were going to drive into an ambush like a mile up or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, oh, okay, cool. Let's turn it around. Which I'm pretty sure that guy's family got murdered.
Yeah, that's
afterwards.
Oh, that's rough.
You know, which is sad.
Yeah.
Wife, kids, all gone, mm-hmm. right? And so we go back to base. We, whatever, doesn't really matter. But then we go back out a day or two later. It's 100 kilometers away from the base. Okay, that is important information for everyone to know.
It's like a 4-hour drive or something like that, I think they were saying.
It's a while.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we get to the location. There's clearly Taliban there. The guy that's talking to them and quote-unquote complying with everything that's happening. Ahmed kind of like realizes like, this is just bad. Like, he's telling us Talibans are that way, which was proper information. The guy wasn't lying.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also Taliban there.
Yeah.
And he had, like, one of his buddies had just called reinforcements, right? So they get ambushed eventually, and John's entire squad dies.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers. But then Ahmed does his thing, and John and him escape that area.
Mm-hmm.
They're being hunted by the Taliban. They're able to find a hut, and they sleep. And then, you know, we have John was actually able to take a radio at one point, so he hears that they find a house. By deductive reason, we kind of find out that that house that they're looking at is the house that they're in, so they start moving. And all that good jazz, right? Eventually, John gets caught. Ahmed saves him that first time, and then John is badly wounded,
mm-hmm.
and he drags his ass through the desert 100 clicks back to base.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what the movie is about.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it. We're not going to ruin the ending,
yeah.
but that's it. That's what happens. John gets eventually sent, gets to base with Ahmed. Ahmed, at gunpoint, gets basically arrested by the Americans. They don't realize who he is,
mm-hmm.
although he just brought John back. And then John gets sent back home, and then Ahmed just disappears.
Yeah.
So now, boom, we are all caught up. That's the movie.
Yes.
And that's it. That's all we're going to say.
Yeah.
I think. So, let's start off with Guy Ritchie directed this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Ritchie does Guy Ritchie shit.
Yeah.
Which is a bunch of slow motion and a lot of fucking
speed up.
Yeah, and speed ramps.
Down. And then normal, yeah.
And then give me a headache, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For it being a Guy Ritchie movie, what did you think about it? Was it very Guy Ritchie of it?
Yeah. So I, first of all, really liked it. And I like a lot of Guy Ritchie movies. And I saw elements of his directing in there. So he has the really slow motion, everything's muffled. That happens quite a few times with John specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And then also throughout if they're in a really intense situation, everything slows down, which I think within the context of everything, I think that makes sense. Because when you're in that kind of situation, it does sometimes feel like time is slowing down. I think that there's quite a few of those. And by the end, I was kind of okay, this has happened quite a few times. I think it's kind of lost its novelty. It's not as it's not as impressive almost, and it doesn't have quite the same impact as it did at the beginning of the movie. And so just throughout it, it was really good. I think it was just maybe a tad overdone, but we were talking a little bit off air that on Sherlock Holmes and stuff like that, it's he uses it a lot. And so I was interested to see it happening, and it also you could see kind of that taste of Guy Ritchie's elements of his directing in there.
Yeah.
I think it was a bit overdone, but maybe not as much as in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. I hate Aladdin. I feel like Aladdin was unnecessary to have all the speed ramps and
mm-hmm.
slow-mos. I hated King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because of the speed ramps and the slow-mos, but also just the story was bad. And the green screen was obvious.
Oof.
To me. A lot of people couldn't pick it up, but to me, I was gosh darn, that's terrible.
I get that, yeah.
However, I love this movie. I love The Gentlemen. I love all his other mobbish movies. I love them. His mm-hmm. heist movies, they're great. His style lends itself to those styles of movies. The speed ramps, the slow motion of everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
It works for those type of movies. However, for historical pieces like King Arthur, kind of not. But yet, this movie he did so well. I feel like he grew up. You know,
yeah.
He matured and knew exactly when to use it and when not to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't share the same opinion of yours of maybe he did it too much. I think he did just enough.
Mm-hmm.
He did just enough with showing PTSD. When you first hear a gunshot go off near you, when you're not expecting it, or an explosion, you do feel that dazed and dazed and confused kind of a thing, where slow motion is probably the best describer of it, because you have that ringing in your ear and then you're like, whoa, what just happened? Let me collect myself because I can't feel my head.
Mm-hmm.
Or did I just get hit and all those thoughts are going through your head? It was a very good representation of that. So I loved all of that. I thought it was really great. So I don't share the same opinion of He used it too much by the end of the movie. I felt just enough to convey those feelings,
mm-hmm.
which is rare for Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
Or at least I feel like it's rare for Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
So the storytelling was amazing. Like, this movie was 2 hours and 3 minutes with credits.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just call it 2 hours.
Yeah.
Did you feel like it was too long for 2 hours?
I thought it was perfect. I felt like the pacing was really, really, really good, actually, because we've talked a couple times on the previous podcast. We're like, okay, stop making 2 hour movies. But this one was totally an exception to that. I felt like it was following a really great story. There's a really long time in the desert that probably takes up 20, 30 minutes of the movie, maybe more. And like, there's very little dialogue. It's a lot of just sweeping shots of this desert, and just like Ahmed struggling through this desert. And it didn't feel boring. It totally felt necessary. And I think if they had taken any of it out, like, it wouldn't have been as good.
Right.
Like, it needed to be in there. Everything needed to be in there. And I think they spent just enough time on everything. There was never a time that I felt bored. I was just like, this is just perfect, like, timing-wise for me. And I got to see, like, the development of the characters. And you got to see, like, the relationships between John and his wife, or Ahmed and his wife and his kid. And so you got to see everything that you needed to see without it feeling superfluous. Like, just too much. It was, I think it was really well balanced. It was really well timed. It was really great.
Definitely agree with you. Well, we kind of like calculated, like, it was 2 hours. It's like, oh, because we usually watch something, we're like, oh, we would have taken this out, we would have taken that out.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, like, there's nothing as we went through scrolling through it that was worth taking out, right? Because if you take out one part of it, kind of doesn't make sense. It takes away from that emotion,
mm-hmm.
of connecting you with that character or feeling for that character,
yeah.
especially when John is in America and Ahmed is stuck in Afghanistan. Because one thing that we didn't mention was that, or we did mention, these Afghanis that are helping Americans are seen as traitors, and the Taliban more than likely will kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the kind of like the notoriety that Ahmed and John had,
mm-hmm.
of killing Afghanis, or excuse me, of killing Taliban members, they want them dead.
Yeah.
And we see it in the movie of the Taliban hunting Ahmed down.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that if you took one part out, you kind of became emotionally detached from the situation.
Yeah.
Just shows you that the writing was so good, and that the editor, and who knows how much they actually cut in the cutting floor,
mm-hmm.
But whatever they left in worked so well to progress the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every little thing, because we see this in every single movie, that sometimes they just add shit for the sake of adding stuff.
Yeah,
it's fluff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it. I know most recently we were talking about, I forget what movie it was.
Was it Evil Dead Rise?
It might have been Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah, because that one was over 2 hours, I think.
But it was...
And there was another movie that I think we watched.
I can't remember, but it was like a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
Where it was just unnecessary fluff that we were like, well, we could have taken this out.
Uh-huh.
And it was still might have worked. I don't know if we talked about it on air or off air, but we did talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always discussing, like, what would you have cut? I think Scream was one of the movies that we said,
oh, yeah.
what we would have cut off to make it a little better.
Yeah.
Probably Scream 3 or 4.
Yeah, I think specifically. It was Scream 4. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there's things there, right? Like, almost every movie has too much fluff.
Yeah.
But this one kind of did a really good job in creating the sense of need.
Yeah.
Marvel movies are notorious for fluff.
Yes.
Especially my good old friend Taika Waititi. Cannot stand the Thor movies.
I just recently watched Quantumania, and I talked to you about it, and I was like,
there's so much.
That movie was pointless.
Yep. Yep. And so, like, not this one.
Mm-hmm. It felt so smooth.
Mm-hmm.
I was even, like, I watched it later at night, and it just seriously felt like it was just really well done. It was, like, smooth. It didn't feel like any of the transitions were jarring. It made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as a war movie is concerned, do you feel like this one did a good job in depicting the realities and the horror of war?
I think in some ways it did. I have seen a limited amount of war movies, but the ones that I've seen have been really good. But I found this one to be really interesting because there was a lot less action than you see in a regular, just kind of a run-of-the-mill kind of war movie. Because we were looking at it and it's like action doesn't happen till like 30 minutes into the movie. So they use that first like 20, 30 minutes of the movie, building up these relationships, helping you get to know the characters. Something that was really, really helpful for me was that at the very beginning of the movie, they like, as they introduced the characters, they had their name and their nickname. And for like a person who needs the visual, connection there, it was really helpful. And so it really helped us build those relationships with these characters before we got to see them in action. I think that it also did a really good job of showing how these translators were treated outside of the American bases and also with the Taliban. It's almost like they didn't have anywhere to be. The Americans took them in for as long as they needed them, and then they just put them back into where they were before. And like, that's crazy to do because they don't have somewhere to be for all of this that they risked and sacrificed for you. Like they aren't getting the recognition that they deserve, you know?
Yeah. And who knows, right? Cause like the promise is visas. Mm-hmm. And who knows if, because we know that Ahmed's, you know, paperwork all of a sudden, like, oh yeah, we don't know where he's at. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess we don't need to do anything.
Right. Yeah, and like, so who knows how many other interpreters were given the same type of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it did a really good job describing or depicting the reality of war, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a saying that says anyone who knows about war or who's ever been in a war doesn't want to fight another war. It's always like the young kids that have never been in war, they're like, yeah, let's go fight. And I feel like this was a really good representation of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because John is there out of duty, right? But then Ahmed is there out of obligation to his family. He has seen what war does. He has seen it throughout years because he was working with the Taliban at one point. And so he's doing it to get his family out of that. He doesn't want his kid being raised in that chaos. The horror that we see in this movie, we see it in the sense of just how treacherous that environment could be, how lonely it could be to be someone that works for the Americans, and then how dangerous it is to be an American with Taliban
mm-hmm.
in the area. So it was just a good representation. I really did enjoy that. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and you had also said some stuff about off air about the scene of PTSD with John mm-hmm. and how well that represented that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Because that is one of the biggest things that definitely you take away, right? When you're in war and when you come back, like it's hard to be quote unquote normal again, because there's so much shit that you see or that you've done that you can't forgive yourself. And I think this was the biggest thing for John, was that he couldn't forgive the fact that, one, he was the only survivor
mm-hmm.
of his squad. And two, the man that saved his life, he can't even think personally because he was never granted what he was promised. And for a person that is filled with duty and honor, when your country that has taught you those principles don't fulfill it, you're like, how can you be the moral compass of anyone when you don't even follow?
Yeah.
It's very much do as I say, not as what I do, mm-hmm. you know? So that was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, I like that Guy Ritchie did a really good job in calling out the hypocrisy that America does have.
Yeah.
You know? So it was nice. It was really good. Did the movie effectively capture the emotional toll that war takes on individuals and societies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of what you just said about the PTSD. I think also it does really show it really well, because you saw the toll it took on John's family and how they mourned him for weeks when they thought he was dead. Or you also saw families being pulled out of their homes and threatened for information. You see Ahmed pulling the cart with John through burning villages because people were not giving the Taliban the information that they wanted. We see people help Ahmed, risking their own lives in order to help him because they respect him and want to help his family because
they simply don't like the Taliban.
Exactly. They're doing it because they don't like the Taliban. Right. Yeah, yeah.
They didn't like the Americans.
Yeah.
But the Talibans were worse.
Yes.
It was literally the lesser of two evils was helping out the American.
Exactly.
Than helping the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so we got to see just kind of the different dynamics that took place in Afghanistan and also in America for the little bit that we're there. And so we see how people reacted to the Taliban. We also saw how the Taliban treated people regardless of if they were with the Taliban. Because there's a truck driver that we see that, like, he has papers and everything. He's with the Taliban. Like, mm-hmm. he's totally given his support to them. And he has papers and everything, but they
papers that they paid for.
Yeah.
They paid the Taliban for these documents to travel on this road.
Wow. I didn't realize that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Because if you remember, they're like, get out of the car. He's like, but I've paid you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've paid to be able to travel.
Yeah. I've paid the toll. Yeah. Like, yeah, totally. And so, like, we see how the Taliban treat even those that say that they're loyal to them.
Right.
It's like, they don't care. It's whatever is the most interesting to them or whatever they want to do. It's mm-hmm. because they're in control in those situations. So it's a pretty scary place for everyone.
Yeah.
You know?
And this is why some people feign loyalty mm-hmm. to the Taliban and they work undercover with Americans. But it's such a big risk for them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sad. What did you think overall as far as performances were concerned? I think Jake did I think Jake kills it in every single role that he gets. Mm-hmm. Have you ever watched Nightcrawler? Is it called Nightcrawler?
No, I haven't.
Well, he's a journalist and he's like, if it bleeds, it pays well or some shit like that.
I think I've totally seen clips, but I don't think I've seen the full movie.
Such a good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You get to hate him so much. I hated him in that movie.
Uh-huh.
But he's so good. Like he gives his all in mm-hmm. performances.
Yeah.
The dude that played Ahmed killed it. I liked him. He mm-hmm. was very quiet.
Yes.
And although I feel like he didn't have a lot of lines, mm-hmm. he didn't have to have lines
yeah.
to command the scene.
Exactly.
And Jake didn't, when they were sharing the scene, he didn't take it over.
Yeah.
It was just very well balanced.
I totally agree.
One talked a lot. One was caught, like, stoic.
Yes. That's a really good word for it. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think everybody did a really, really good job. Jake Gyllenhaal, really great. I've seen him in quite a few movies. A lot of more of his, like, lighter roles. I have seen him in a couple more, like, intense roles. But this is probably one of the most intense roles that I've seen him in. And, like, he does a great job. He just really committed to this role, which is really great to see in a lot of actors. And I think Ahmed did a great job. I think his wife did a great job. I think John's wife did a great job as well. There's a specific scene where she's talking to him and it's like, we had to mourn you. And so we're going to do this and I'm going to be behind you 100%, which I think was just a really powerful scene there.
Get you a wife that's John's wife, bro.
Yeah.
Be that wife.
So yeah, it was just really good. I really enjoyed all the performances, specifically Jake Gyllenhaal. And who plays Ahmed? I feel like we should give him the...
No idea.
Like, the name on here. Let me look it up. But he did just a great job. So
yeah, no, they all killed it. And I do like how they presented the military wife. Not a lot of you on the internet. You tend to see a lot of disgusting humans.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of military wives, especially when they're like high ranking officers. Like, you gonna call me by my husband's rank?
Yeah.
It's very annoying. However, when you have like a really good military wife, especially when you have a career like what John obviously had, you love that in a person, right? Whether it's a wife or a husband, you love that it's like, obviously this is troubling you. You're not going to get any rest until you figure out if he's alive or dead. Oh, cool. You figured out he's alive. Cool. You're not going to rest until he's back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do what we got to do.
Yeah, and those times where he was sitting up in bed and was just, like, couldn't sleep, she was there for him. She wasn't just like, oh, go back to sleep, it's fine, it's fine. Yeah. She's like, what can we do to make this better? Like, how can we work together to make this,
yeah,
like, to help you heal from this hurt and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the actor was Dar Salim. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's D-A-R-S-A-L-I-M.
Dar Salim.
Yeah. He did a great job.
Yeah, he killed it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this movie also did a really good job, because if you've noticed, other movies make you hate anybody else that's not the main character, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one, there was no one aside from the Taliban.
Yeah.
Which you really didn't hate the Taliban either. You just understood very clearly that they were the antagonist.
Yes.
They were the villain. You didn't hate anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Even those who were a little bit of an opposition to John's mission, which was to get the visas, the slight opposition wasn't enough to be like, that guy's a dick. We don't like him as well. Mm-hmm. He's as bad as the Taliban. It was more of, Talibans are the big bad. Everybody else is stuck with this bureaucracy bullshit, and we understand, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that representation of the red tape that you have to cut through sometimes to get to something.
Yeah.
Right? John was no longer in the military, so when he calls out the captain, like, you know what? You owe me because I saved your life, and I know that you're a man that pays his debts. You know I'm a man that pays my debt. I can't pay my debt because homie's not here. Like, that was... like, that was impactful enough.
Yeah, like, pay your debts.
Yes, because, yeah, like, I've met leadership that are just pieces of crap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've not just in the military, but also outside of the military, like, I've met people like that, where it's like, they just don't, they, to me, like, the very old-fashioned definition of a man is someone who keeps their word. These people tend to be men just because that was assigned to them, not because they are honorable. And I feel like this movie was just like, to be an officer in the military, to be a man, you have to honor your word.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they... perfect movie. I liked it.
Yeah.
Can't complain about them. I don't think that there's anything that I could be like, man, this movie sucked about this.
Yeah. I seriously can't think of anything. Because I think they did a great job. And there were honestly a lot of times where I was like, I don't know if they're going to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to get through this. Like, there were definitely, like, high risk. It definitely made you feel... like, totally in the moment. I felt like it was very, like, immersive almost. It was like you were there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You definitely shared the same experiences without, mm-hmm, having to share the same experiences.
Yeah.
Do you feel, as someone who hasn't been to war or grew up knowing there was a war for the most of their life, do you feel like you have a fresh perspective of the war in the Middle East?
I totally do, honestly. This movie just brought to light a lot of what was going on there. I was honestly pretty ignorant to what was going on there. Like, that's something that I honestly am going to do more research into, become more knowledgeable about it. That I didn't realize there were interpreters that were, like, that there were people from Afghanistan, like, giving up so much to come help the Americans and doing it to save their families and everything. And, it also, like, honestly, growing up in America, you're like, America's great. We could never do any wrong. But then, like, seeing stuff, like, in these movies, it's like, yes, we did good things, but we also did kind of bad things. Like, we're not, like, we don't get off scot-free, you know?
Yeah.
And then also, it was really cool to see, like, the brotherhood that comes from being in these groups and seeing them work together. And also, like, it's really painful to see them go and to see them die. And so, it was really impactful for me to see this, like, in a movie, and, like, seeing how people treated each other and, like, how scary it would be to be, like, with the Taliban in your country. That'd be so scary. And it also gave me an even better perspective about what happened in 2021, where they pulled out all the troops and, like, not everybody got out. And we just saw in this movie one situation where, like Ahmed's family got abandoned in a way. And so I think it's just really impactful to see this one situation. And it's like, this is happening to a bunch of families right now, like, in the real world. It's not just a story, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if it's a fresh perspective, just because I've, again, 09, I signed up in 08 to, in 09 I was out, but, you know, you kind of, like, all my friends, all my close friends are military dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Are dudes that I met either while I was over there or afterwards, and they're veterans now, right? And so we've met somehow, and then you just create that bondage, right? Because a lot of people, when they're out, the thing that they miss the most is that brotherhood that you have, mm-hmm. right? The people that you could talk to about anything. Obviously, if you don't know me personally, you don't know, but like I'm very irreverent about a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The darkest humor that you will ever know, and it's just the way that you handle things at that point, right? And so people that you could talk to and say like the craziest shit to, and then not be judged because you said something so outlandish, you don't get that anywhere else. You get that only in the military.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way it is. My brother-in-law, he's in the Navy. We could, like, I met him the first time, and the shit that was coming out of my mouth, any other family person would have been like, I hate you. We're not, no, you can't be with my sister kind of a thing. And it was just like that clear understanding. Oh, I know exactly the type of person that you are because of what you're doing. Definitely ex-military. You're the coolest guy ever kind of thing. Like the relationship that we have is not a relationship that you could have with anybody that's not ex-military. It just doesn't work out. You'll call them an asshole most of the time. That's why I'm like, yeah, I'm an asshole. Like it is what it is. Uh-huh. Like, it's just what it is. And so showing that's the type of relationships that you're going to forge when you go in and when you've gone through shit together, then it was just great.
Yeah.
Guy Ritchie did a great job. What would you rate the movie?
I think I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
Holy shit. That's your first five.
Yeah. It was like, I don't think I could list one bad thing about it. That's the thing. Because I was like thinking about giving it a little bit lower because I've never given a 5. But like, I don't have anything negative to say about it. I think it was just such a great movie. It really like portrayed what it was wanting to show. And like the actors did a great job. I think that they all fully committed to their roles, which I love seeing in movies. And the story was great. The cinematography was great. Like I have no negative things to say about this movie. I really, really enjoyed it.
Nice. I will also give it a 5. I think it's the first war movie that we've talked on about, in Real Beard News, and I think it's the first one that's going to get a 5.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched Saving Private Ryan. I've watched other war movies, Band of Brothers, and stuff like that. Those are great, but I'm not relatable to it.
Mm-hmm.
This is about a war that I'm very familiar with.
Yeah.
And it's many consequences around the world. Many consequences in my personal life as well. And so the way that it depicts a lot of things was just one of those things that I'm like, yeah, I would do, like I would have done the same, or yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just very enjoyable to watch. And it was just a great storytelling. Everything that was done with a purpose. It felt very military. Like it almost felt like a propaganda for the like join us kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like you'll find people that are like John.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely was just something that was there to not just entertain, but it was to inform as well.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think it definitely promotes tolerance and empathy and sympathy towards people who are Muslim, because at the end of the day, you don't know if they got here just yesterday because they helped save American lives.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that it's like you don't know someone's story until you know their story.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be a dick.
Yeah.
And so I love that about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really like that at the end it almost gives a call to action in a way, that it talks about how there's still families in Afghanistan who are trying to get out. Like there's still people like Ahmed out there, like, and also American families that need to be brought home.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And I would also say that it's just a really good talk about our immigration process.
Mm-hmm.
Because how are we promising, you know, these people, these interpreters, visas, and yet take way too damn long to give them visas?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same way with every other, you know, illegal, quote unquote illegal that is in this country that has applied for residency or a visa type thing. That we are just making them wait years and years and years. And mm-hmm. then it's like, well, you don't pay your taxes. It's like, but did you give me a green card, though?
Yeah.
You know, like I think we take for granted the fact that we're Americans, that we're born here, that we were raised here, that we don't know those struggles. We don't understand those struggles. I have been fortunate enough that my mom was illegal. I wasn't. I was born here. Mm-hmm. My mom was illegal, though, and her struggle of getting her green card to become a resident was so, so hard. And I remember for so many years, the only reason that she got it was because my dad decided to divorce her 2006, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
But because he had been so physically abusive to her, that caused her to get her residency card.
Wow.
There's a law.
Huh.
At least in New York, there's a law that if you are a battered wife, you get your green card.
Wow.
At least back in the day there was. Mm-hmm. So that just says a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Right? Like, you have to be abused to get your green card or your residency card. You have to, otherwise she was probably still be illegal. Like, my mom's a citizen now.
Mm-hmm.
But it took so long.
Yeah.
To do those things, right? Like, I'm 8 years old translating at the immigration office, right? Or my mm-hmm. sister, if I'm eight, my sister's like 14, 15, translating for my mom. Like, we had to become fucking paralegals.
Yeah.
To translate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just one of those things that it also calls, like, we need to be better. If people are trying to do shit legally, help them.
Yeah, yeah.
But
totally.
Otherwise, they're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's it. That's Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, not to be confused with The Witchcraft, The Covenant.
Yes.
I think we both gave him 5s out of 5s.
Yeah, easy 5 out of 5.
Great story, great. Cinematography was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Actors were a delight to watch.
Yeah.
You don't feel the 2 hours
Mm-mm.
in it, so. Cool. I liked it. What's the next one that we're doing?
That is a good question. Let me pull it up. We have a schedule now so that we can make sure we're getting everything done.
We've always had a schedule.
That's true. But this is like a longer schedule.
It's an official tissue schedule.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Next, we have The Pope's Exorcist and Dungeons & Dragons.
I'm so excited for The Pope's Exorcist. I will rewatch that because I watched it back in early May, I think it was. So. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Excited for that.
And I'm going to watch it this
and
week, too.
I have to watch Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one cool. was a fun one.
Is it?
Yeah. It's like a fun movie. Like, I wouldn't say, like, wow, it was amazing, but it was fun.
Nice.
That's actually, that might be also a 2-hour movie. I feel like everything's 2 hours these days.
Damn.
I watched the Little Mermaid movie, and it was 2 hours. Why? So.
Why would you watch that? But between the next time that we see you, thank you for watching, or thank you for listening, depending on what you're doing. Don't forget, keep reading those comic books, keep watching that anime, rock and roll. Most importantly, be nice to people and stay nerdy, guys.